Ruchim HaBoyim to another week of Parsha Insights, Parsha's Balai. So wonderful to be able to give this year here in Gan Ariel. So as we say, whether you're joining us here in the Gan, or for the many people who are listening live, or from the people who will Bezus Hashem hear it when it's sent out, I hope we'll get chizuk from this shir and be able to use it to give us a greater understanding of Parsha Insights, and of course to bring added Kedusha to our Shabbos Kodesh, but it's a big honor to be able to give the Shir Parsha Insights. Parshas Baloyschan, I hope everyone Bezos Hashem be inspired. This week's Shir is sponsored Lezecher Nishmas Uleile Nishmas Rebecca Bas Serena and Leon Ben Rachel. Bezos Hashem, may their Neshama Tahiris have a Lichtiget Lichtiget Gan Eden. And the Shir is also sponsored. We have an additional sponsor as well, Baruch Hashem, and I'm very grateful. It's to my in-laws, Reb Chaim and Judy Gross. They're sponsoring tonight's shir to commemorate the yard site of my mother-in-law's mother, Chaya Freira Bas Reb Mordechai Zev. The yard site was today Yud Dalet Sivan. So now as we end her yard site, it's a tremendous chus and really a very big honor to be able to say the shir L'zecher Uleili Neshmos. Again, very grateful to my dear in-laws, Reb Chaim and Judy Gross, for their sponsorship of this year. And please remember and have in mind that it is L'zecher Nishmas Uleili Neshmos, my mother-in-law's mother, Maras Chaya Freira, Bas Reb Mordechai Zev. May Itaka bring for her Neshama Tahira that this year is L'zecher Nishmos Uleili Nishmas. So we find in the Parsha, in the beginning of Perek Tes, based on events that are told here and events that are told to us in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, that we'll see in a moment, Rashi famously teaches us, if you take a look, Perek Tes, Rashi says in the beginning of Aleph, that really it seems that this pasuk, these psukim are out of order. Rashi teaches us that ein seder mukter mocha b'Torah, which of course we know means that the events that are in the Torah do not necessarily follow chronological order. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's back up a little bit and talk about those events. And I must tell you the beginning of what I'm sharing with you, I was privileged to see in the Sefer Avnei Kodesh. I have it here if one wants to see it inside in the second volume. And it's an absolute, absolute masterpiece. I'm only taking part of it, two different parts, and then I'd like to share with you some insights that I thought of. But the beginning that we're saying is taken from the second volume in Avnei Kodesh, and I'm so excited to be able to share it with you. There, the Sefer mentions what we just said, that if you take a look, the events that are mentioned in this perek, again, if you have this Chumash, it's page 778, the beginning of Perek Tes, talking about our Karban Pesach in the Midbar in the wilderness, this took place in the first month of the second year of our leaving Mitzrayim. Yet if you take a look in the opening prokim of Sefer Parshas Bamidbar, meaning a couple of parshios ago, those events happened that same year, but the second month. Now, the second month is after the first month, so why are those events mentioned a couple of parshios earlier, and this which happened first is mentioned later? And that's where we have Rashi that teaches us that we learn from here, Shein Seder Mukter Mukher Bataira, that it doesn't necessarily follow a chronological order, and indeed that's true, because as I just showed you, this event happened earlier, yet it's mentioned a couple of parshiyos later. If one takes a look at that Rashi that I'm referencing, the Torah will not put something out of its chronological order, usually, if there's not a reason that this should be the case. If a person takes a look at Rashi, Rashi explains the reason why this, bringing the Karban Pesach in the Midbar, in the wilderness, did not open up Sefer Bamidbar, if indeed, as I told you already twice, chronologically it happened earlier, says Rashi, Mipnei Shehu, Genusam Shel Yisro, because really this pasuk, bringing the Karban Pesach in the Midbar, was a ginus, a genai, a discredit to Klal Yisrael, and therefore we don't want to begin Sefer Bamidbar with something that was shameful to Klal Yisrael. Why was this shameful? Because in all of the years, the 40 years that we were in the Midbar, we brought only one Karban Pesach. That was embarrassing to Klal Yisrael, so we don't want to begin the Sefer with something shameful, and that's why the chronological order is mixed up. In other words, the event that happened later is in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, and this which happened first is only now in the ninth perek of Parshas Bishalach. The order is changed so that something which is shameful or a discredit to Klal Yisrael doesn't open up Sefer Bamidbar. So one must wonder a question that seems to be fairly obvious, or certainly should bother us. You're right that it is not mentioned in the beginning of the Sefer, but rather it's mentioned here in Parshas Bahaloyska. It's done in a way that it shouldn't go ahead and bring out that discredit and shameful to start off the Sefer. But Lemaisa, it is being mentioned. I am mentioning it to you. The Torah does mention it in Perek Tes. So the Ginus is mentioned. That which was shameful, that there was only one Karban Pesach in 40 years, which was a Ginus and a discredit to us, is mentioned. So how is it that pushing off the story a couple of Parshios that makes things better for us? It saves us, as Avnei Kodesh says, from indignity. And the Sefer goes on to bring other occasions where this question could be raised. However, there's a beautiful explanation that answers this. It's based on something we've said it in the past. In fact, we said it this past year. It's a famous pshat from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mir Rosh Hashiva Zechatzad, the Kodesh of Bracha. It's a pshat that we've mentioned. We've used it on our TMT. We put it in our weekly Divrei Torah. But this is what the Sefer Avnei Kodesh uses, and it will help answer the question, which again, the question is, if it's something that's a shameful thing for us, how is it then that we are pushing it off, so to speak, makes things better? It's still mentioned. I just read you the story in the beginning of the ninth chapter of Parshas Bahaloyska. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz speaks about a similar idea. If you take a look, after Yosef was sold to merchants, he was brought to Mitzrayim in a caravan. And Rashi, of course, tells us that although a caravan usually has foul-smelling ingredients, but this, the Ribbono Shel Olam arranged to have pleasant-smelling spices so that Yosef, on his journey in the caravan to Mitzrayim, wouldn't have to smell a foul odor. Normally, it would be a type of petroleum or resin or something that had a foul odor, but this was with a sweet-smelling aroma, so he wouldn't have to be bothered. Now, you're right. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, having something that smells sweet is definitely better than having to endure the smell of something that has a foul odor. But did that really make a difference to Yosef HaTzadik? Envision where he was holding at this point in his life. He went from where he was on the great heights and certainly was now nowhere near where he was before this journey started. His brothers, his own flesh and blood, sold him, exiled from his family, from the Kiddush of Eretz Yisrael, going to Eretz Mitzrayim, which was a land that was so debased and immoral, it was on the 49th level of impurity. He's going to be stuck in this land, wandering or seemingly no hope of ever leaving. And all of this that's going on, does it really make a difference if Yosef would have to endure the regular foul-smelling odor or that there would be pleasing besamim? Is that going to change Yosef's situation? I just gave you a clear explanation of what Yosef was going through. And it's going to make a difference, an iota of difference, what the smell is in the caravan on his journey to Mitzrayim. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz famously tells us it's true that it did not change his situation. It didn't change the current situation, and all that I told you that he did endure and was about to endure was indeed 100% accurate. However, the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam orchestrated it, that the caravan should be carrying something of a sweet-smelling aroma, not the foul odor, that did make all the difference in the world to Yosef HaTzadik. Because Yosef HaTzadik, with everything that he was going through from his brothers, losing family, it could allow a sense of yiyush, of despair, to set in. Perhaps Yosef could think that he's been abandoned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam specifically arranged that this caravan should carry what was not typical of it to carry, to show Yosef, I'm still with you. I'm with you. Don't have years. Don't let that abandonment set in wherever you go, even though things seem the absolute bleakest. You realize the Hashkoch of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you're right, Rabbi Yisai. Did it change the situation or anything that he did or would once now continue to endure? It didn't change it at all. But it was a way of the Ribbono Shel Olam creating a situation that wasn't normal. This is not what a caravan usually carried. As a way for Yosef to realize, I haven't been abandoned. I should not despair. I should not let you set in. It was the neshika of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing his Hashkacha Pratis, I am with you in this matziv. And that was known to Yosef by the not typical sweet-smelling spices being provided. And so we find the same thing, that taking this concept of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, yes, the Torah had to mention this event and let us know this, which was an indignity to Klal Yisrael, that there was only one Karban Pesach during the 40 years in the Midbar. That's true. But from the fact that it was mentioned, not in the beginning to start off the Sefer, but rather was placed a few parshiyos in the Sefer, that shows and demonstrates how dear and precious we are to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Mayrei v'Rabbeisai, never forget that. Did it change the situation? Did it change something that per se was shameful to us? Was Ginus Shel Yisrael? No, it didn't. We brought only one Karban Pesach in 40 years, and that was a fact, and that has to be mentioned. But it was cushioned. It was, so to speak, mentioned in Parshas Baloischa, not starting off by Midbar. That was the sweet-smelling spice, as opposed to the foul odor that would have come from other things. The sweet-smelling spice over here was placing what needed to be mentioned, but putting it in, somewhat inconspicuously, if you will, in Parshas Baloischa, as a way of demonstrating how dear and precious we are to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It had to be mentioned, but the way it was mentioned, where it was mentioned, the oifen it was mentioned, was our sweet-smelling spice. Like Yosef had in the caravan, this was the way of the Ribbono Shel Olam showing us. The teichacha, the musar, had to be mentioned. The admonishment had to be given. But where and when and how it was given makes all the difference in the world. So while these events were not concealed and needed to be remembered and had to be learned from, but they were not, so to speak, featured prominently so that we wouldn't be shamed and we could still see Hashem's love for all of us. Before I share with you a few thoughts that came to my mind based on this beautiful, beautiful Pshat from Avnei Kodesh in the Sefer, there's then a story brought down with Rabbi Dr. Avram Yeshua Tursky. When he was a little boy, he was a gifted chess player. And there were many elderly people in his father's shtiebel. He, of course, went on to become the wonderful and great Rabbi Tursky. But when he himself was a little boy, there were many people in his father's shtiebel, being the gifted chess player that he was able to beat. There was once a rabbi visiting from a different city that stayed in their home for Rosh Hashanah. And after the suit on the first day, this rabbi approached the young boy, Avram Yeshua, and he said to him, he was 8 or 9 at the time, he wanted to have a match, a chess match. The little boy inquired if it's permitted to play on Rosh Hashanah, and he was told by the rabbi it is. So he played against the person, and the little boy beat the rabbi in chess on Rosh Hashanah. That evening, when the little Avraham Yeshua Tursky, he was told that his father wanted to speak to him, he went to his father's office. His father looked up from the Gemara, and his father asked his son quietly, saying it in Yiddish, "You play chess on Rosh Hashanah?" The son replied that the rabbi told me it was permitted, but his father shook his head in disappointment. And the son understood that it was clearly the wrong thing to do. The father went back to learning. The son realized the lesson of what his father was teaching, that it was wrong. A little while, but a moment later, the father looked up from his Gemara again, and with like a little bit of a twinkle in his eye, he asked his son, "But you did checkmate him, didn't you?" And that's when the one that grew up to be the famous Rabbi Tursky realized, Teichacha has to be given. The father had to let his son know, you don't play chess on Rosh Hashanah. It had to be said and it must be said. But at the same time, that very smart father, Rabbi Tursky Sr., wanted him to know that although the mussar had to be given, I still care about you, I love you, and he wanted to make sure you did beat him. If a person takes a look in the Torah, we are told, Haycheach Teichiach Hasamisecha. That's the famous commandment where we're told sometimes you have to give somebody reproof, rebuke, mussar. Haycheach Teichiach Hasamisecha. Mussar has to be given. That's not always a comfortable thing to do. In fact, my father, Harav Mordechai Shapiro Zatzal, would famously say the words of Chazal, Divrei Chachomim Benachas Nishmoin. And if you want your words to be heard, and you want your words to be accepted, you give them over Benachas. You give them over in a proper way, in a soft way, at the right time. My father would constantly say those words. They were shogar b'fiv, divrei chachomim b'nachas nishmoin. And sometimes the mussar has to be given, but the way that you give it, the way that it's received, the time that you give it, the inflection with which you give it over when you can b'nachas, so that it will be readily accepted. At least you stand a much greater chance. So going back to that mitzvah in the Torah, it's a mitzvah, sometimes you have to give mussar. You know what it says right after I believe this pshat is from the great Or Gedaliahu, Reb Gedaliahu Shor. It's such a marvelous pshat, such a deep insight. Usually we translate to mean, but don't go ahead and bear a sin because of him. In other words, be careful how you give the mussar, the reproof, the rebuke. But the word sisa is also from the word vayisa. What does the word vayisa mean? To raise up. So he says so beautifully, the Torah is teaching us, you're right. Sometimes you have to give mussar. But remember the cardinal and golden rule. V'loisisa olav chet. Now, what do we say the word sisa is from vayisa? Don't raise up the chet. Don't blow it out of proportion. Don't make it more grandiose than it is. Get to the point. Say it properly. Don't make a greater deal than necessary. Haycheach techeach esamisecha. And you want that mussar, the gentle rebuke, to be accepted and received properly, here's the golden rule. Listen carefully. Don't raise up the chet. In other words, whatever you feel needs to be mentioned, the sin that the person did, whatever it might be that you think was inappropriate, whatever it is, don't raise it up. Don't make a bigger deal out of it. Don't all of a sudden start having a great memory. You know, in the last 14 years, you did this 22 times. I remember. Well, here's the list. Don't do that. It's a recipe for disaster. Don't raise up and blow out of proportion. You're going to lose the person, and you'll never have mussar that's received. In fact, we've mentioned in the past from Reb Chaim Volozhiner, it's based on a concept of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, it's such a powerful idea. If you remember earlier in Sefer, towards the end of Sefer Bereishis, when Yaakov Avinu had his grandchildren Ephraim and Menashe in front of him, Sikel is Yodav, he switched his hands. Now by switching the hands, that means that he ended up putting his right hand on the right of the person in front of him. I switch my hand, and I put my left hand on the left side of the person where I switch. If I would put my hands out straight like this, my left is on your right, and my right is on your left. But if I switch my hands, as I'm now doing here in Gan Ariel, my left is on your left, and my right is on your right. Based on the thought of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, this is a basic, basic idea. Relationships 101. It could be a person with their spouse, with a sibling, with whomever it might be, but certainly, certainly in Shalom Bayis. The right side of a person, the right side always represents their strengths, things that they're very good at, qualities that they possess. The left side, and nobody should take offense if you're a lefty, I'm a lefty, but the left side does represent at times that weakness. In other words, the things that the person might have a chisaron in, a deficiency, not do as well. Everyone has their right side, and everyone has their left side. When you face your spouse, if you would put your hands out straight, your right would be on their left, and your left would be on their right. That means that when it comes to their left side, which is their weakness, so to speak, the thing that might bother you, if you put your hand straight out, you're putting your right on their left. And right, we said, means the stronger side. That represents that when it comes to their deficiency or their chisaron or the thing that they don't do so well, you put your right side on it, meaning you speak about it, you harp on it, you bring it up again and again. And when it comes to their right side, which represents what they're good at, their qualities, their milas, things that they do so wonderfully, on that we tend to put our left side, meaning we don't pay the compliment often enough. We don't speak about it often enough. It's almost like we take all those things that we should verbally appreciate and brush it under the carpet. To that, the Torah teaches us, seek Eles Yadav, switch your hands. Don't put your right on their left, which means you constantly bring up what bothers you, and put your left on their right, which means you rarely acknowledge what they do so well. Seek Eles Yadav, switch your hands, put your left on their left, and your right on your right, on their right. What does it mean to put your left on their left? When it comes to the things that they do that may bother you, the spouse, whomever it might be, or might be a deficiency, on that put your left side, meaning if it needs to be mentioned, mention it. Get to the point. Say it. Don't bring up an entire say it. Your left on their left. But when it comes to their right side, and their right side represents their strengths, their qualities, the things that you should be admiring, the things that are so meaningful, on that, put your right side, meaning acknowledge it, verbalize it, speak about it, pay a compliment, say thank you, say how meaningful those things are to you. That is so critical in a relationship. Sikel es yadav, right on right and left on left. And I almost feel that that's an extension of the way we started the shiur. with Sefer Avnei Kodesh and what we mentioned from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Yes, it needed to be mentioned that in 40 years we only brought the Korban Pesach once. That had to be mentioned, it had to be recorded, and it had to be remembered. But there's a time for it, there's a place for it, there's a way to do it. And that way is to still have the Ribbono Shel Olam show us how near and dear and how close and how precious we are to Him. In our own relationships, Mahu Af'ato, we are to emulate the way of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So we have to fulfill the mitzvah, Chayach Techiach Es Amisecha. Remember, V'leisisa Olavchet. And like Torsky had to tell his son, you shouldn't be playing chess on Rosh Hashanah. But you beat him, didn't you? And he understood and accepted that Techacha because of the way it was given. Divrei Chachomim Benachas Nishmoy. And I hope that when people will face whomever it might be, their spouse, a sibling, a friend, a co-worker, whoever it is, and you feel something needs to be mentioned, Sikeles Yodov, right on right and left on left. What needs to be mentioned, mention it. The right time, the right place, the right way. And when it comes to a person's right side, please, Rabbeisai, acknowledge it, verbalize it, show the appreciation. Let the other person know with your right side, with your strength, how much you truly appreciate their right side. The Shulchan HaKadosh tells us a pshat. I heard this from my father's atzal. I've seen it in print multiple times. But it's such a powerful lesson. I almost feel that we could say, we spoke before about Relationship 101, that in chinuch and in speaking to our children, today the youth, this is of critical importance. Famously, we're told in Mishle, Al toichach letz pen yisne'eka, toichach lechacham v'hu yavcha, which means, don't rebuke a letz, don't rebuke a scoffer, he'll hate you. Toichach lechacham, rebuke the wise person, and he'll love you. Now, if you heard the words that just came out of my mouth, the question is obvious. It's the letz, the scoffer, the joker that needs the musar. Not the chacham. So why in Mishlei does the pasuk say, "Al toichach les"? Don't rebuke the les. He'll hate you. Rather, rebuke the chacham. The chacham doesn't need the musar. The one that needs to be rebuked is precisely the les. The Shlosh says, "You didn't read the pasuk the way it should be read." Al toichach les does not mean, don't rebuke the letz. Don't rebuke that joker, that scoffer, the one that makes a joke out of everything. It doesn't mean don't rebuke him. Rather, it means al toichach letz. Don't rebuke someone by calling them a letz. Don't rebuke someone by saying, you're never going to be like your sibling. You're a letz. You're a joker. What'd you do? I can't believe it. Al toichach letz means never rebuke someone by calling them a letz. Never rebuke someone by putting them down, by making them feel inferior. Don't do that. Pen yisne'eka, the person he very well come to hate, that person, or certainly come to hate the musar, and you won't have accomplished a thing except probably negative things. Toichach lechachon means, how do you give musar? Chacham. Call the person a chacham. Tell them how wonderful they are. Build them up. Of course you have to mention the thing that might be shameful or the indignity or the thing that's a discredit for them. But never do it by calling them a letz. Hoichach lechacham means not rebuke the chacham. Rebuke the person by calling them a chacham. You're so wise. You're so incredible. You could do better in an inspiring way, in a way that you really believe that you can cause them to do better. Build the person up. Don't knock them down. Toichach lechacham. Rebuke someone by calling them a chacham. by telling them how wonderful they are, how much they can accomplish, how much innate greatness there is, that person will ultimately love you in the sense that you will have pushed them to help them realize if they made a mistake and to maximize their potential. These words of the Shulah HaKadosh are certainly words that it behooves us to live by. And this is really all of these things that we've mentioned taken from the opening pshat. Something had to be mentioned that was Genus Shel Yisrael. But the Ribbono Shel Olam mentioned it a couple of parshiyos in, and in the way it was mentioned and where it was mentioned so that we could get the message, here's the Musar. But you're a Chacham, right on right, how near and dear and precious you are to me. Imagine if in our relationships we would be zeicha to lead our life by remembering haichach lechacham and right on right and leisisa alavchet. And there's one other note to conclude this shir I feel must be mentioned. I actually mentioned it this past Shabbos in one of the minyanim, not in both of the minyanim, in one of the minyanim in the morning drasha. I first had the privilege of seeing it once again in Avnei Kodesh. It's from the great Bava Rebbe, the Kedushas Tzion. I have repeated it so many times since Shabbos Kodesh because I feel it's really the closing piece to everything that we spoke about tonight. If you take a look by Kriyas Yamsuf, by the splitting of the Yamsuf, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, Horim Esmatcha, lift up your stick. The Balaturim tells us, says the Kedusha Sion, the Bava Rebbe, that you find the word Horim, which means to lift up, three times in Tanakh. The one I just mentioned to you, Horim Esmatcha, lift up your stick. The other one is found in the Navi Yeshayahu, where it says, Kashayfer Harim Kolcha, raise your voice. There's that word Harim again. Raise your voice like a shofar. And then in Malachim it says, Harim Loch, pick up for yourself. So you have the word Harim three times. Harim Esmatcha, Harim like the Kailecha, and Harim Loch. And he says so beautifully that Kedusha Sion does, that sometimes we have to give the Musar and we have to express our feelings. We have to teach our children the right way what they should and shouldn't do. So let's take a look at the first Harem. What did the Pasuk say? Harem Esmatcha. What does that mean, to lift up your stick? The right way, the method, is not going to be by threatening them with a stick or by threatening them by hitting them. You're not going to be matzliach that way. To that, the Torah is telling us, Horeim esmatcha, lift up the stick when educating the child and get rid of it, get rid of it. In other words, horeim esmatcha, better not to do it that way. You won't be matzliach, lift it up and get rid of it. What is the more successful way to Be'ezus Hashem educate and impart the lessons to the child? It's the second Horeim. What was the second one in the Masorah, says the Baal Haturim? Horeim Kolcha, lift up your voice. In other words, in such a practical way, let your voice be the effective way. Horeim, lift up your voice, and through your voice and your speaking and your inflection and intonation, let them see the right way and let them see what it is that you expect of them. But he concludes by saying, for that second harem to be most effective, you need the third harem. What was the third harem? Harem lach. Harem lach. Harem lach means lift yourself up. It's not enough to talk the talk. You have to walk the walk. You have to be the real deal. If you want to be effective in educating, be'ezras Hashem, b'siyata d'shmaya, and you want to be effective in giving over the musar, getting the point across, the most effective way is right. Horeim kolcha, lift up your voice. Let them hear the voice. Let them hear. But that in order to be effective, you need, he says, that third harem, harem la. Elevate yourself. Lift yourself up. Show that you not only walk the walk, but you, you not only talk the talk, but you walk the walk, meaning to say that you are the real deal. Then the child or whoever it will be far more ready to listen to the Mussar. And certainly, it's a deep lesson for every one of us. This past Shabbos, when I mentioned it, Dr. Mikey Peritsky, she live and be well, came over to me and pointed out that the word harem is so similar to the word hirim. And hirim, of course, are parents. Note the similarity between the word hirim, parents, and harem, to lift up. It's a message for every one of us as parents, as educators, as people who are trying to make a difference. The harem esmatcha, that we lift up and get rid of, but the harem kocha, to lift up our voice in a way that will be accepted, in a way that will make a tangible difference, for that to happen, we must be the real deal. We must be the person that with a sincere and genuine way gives it over. We'll see that we mean it, and Be'ezus Hashem, it will be accepted. I certainly hope that B'siyata D'Shmaya, in all of our relationships and all those that we deal with, that our words are indeed left on left and right on right, where we're able to build a person up, to let them know how much they mean to us, to verbalize it, to let them sense it, to see that it is coming, mimamakim. And Be'ezras Hashem, that will bring all of us closer to each other, and that will, Be'ezras Hashem, bring us closer to Avinu Shebashamayim.